Hello, everyone. Here we are, paradigm shifting again. And sometimes shifting paradigms can be done with some of the most beautiful techniques. That's why we've encouraged David Eisen to come back on again. David is a musician and a composer, aren't you, David?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, and he's also a cook, a vegetarian restaurant kind of guy, and a community guy, and a long-term spiritual consultant, counselor. And David's come up with a brand new style of entering yours and mine, people that he works with. Essential self is what the term you use, isn't it? And the core vibration of a person. Do you want to tell us what's going on with your new discoveries, David?
Well, first of all, Veronica, I'd just like to say hello to you and everyone out there in Radio Land again. It's very nice to be here.
Yeah, you're back from popular request. I want you to know that.
I'm honored to be back from by popular request. So I'd like to just clarify something. I'm not a vegetarian chef. I am an organic hippie chef, which enjoys lots of fat, lots of meat, lots of protein. And we follow the Sally Fallon method of cooking as well as my own. And I've been doing that.
Now, who's Sally Fallon?
Sally Fallon is the founder of a cooking methodology called Nourishing Traditions.
Oh, I have heard of her.
Yes, very, very well known. This is a Weston Price thing, and that's been around for 50 years.
Hmm.
So no vegetarians here, and lots of...
I'm sorry if I made that terrible mistake.
But
one
okay.
thing you're saying that is consistent with how I began the show was that food is also fun and delightful and so on, just as music is. So it's interesting that you cover quite a broad spectrum in your talents.
Thank you very much. I also do want to say that I'm a writer, and we have published things, and including our new chakra sound system.
Great.
And yes, food and music are very harmonious, to use a term.
Mm-hmm.
They're very harmonious, and I often view, this is a little aside, but I often view cooking, well, not often, I view cooking in terms of musical terms. I think that there are seasonings that are treble, high-end seasonings, and seasonings that are mid-range, and seasonings and flavors that are at the bottom, at the base, like music has treble, mid-range, and bass.
So what seasoning is that treble, just for fun?
Well, I would say that things like oregano and thyme and sage... savory herbs and like that are up high. Also, things like lemons and limes and citrusy things are very top. And you can use a lot of citrus, like lemons and limes, especially to season and make salad dressings and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the middle are things like, well, also on the top is basil, especially fresh basil right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's very top end, and it will take over everything, which the top end, just like America, the top end takes over everything.
Interesting and, connection there.
And, mm-hmm. Right, a basil might be the biggest perpetrator of the taking over thing.
What about now, David? What about mint?
Mint is very top end.
Hmm.
And will and if you put mint, which is a wonderful thing to do, and very old thing, you know, Mideast cooking, Lebanese cooking, Moroccan cooking, you know, Mediterranean flavors are very use mint a lot, and especially Mideastern, Greek, Lebanese. Use mint a lot, and it, like everything, it, like basil, will really take over if you don't be judicious with it. You'll end up with just a bunch of mint tasting things as opposed to a beautiful blend. You know, that's another thing that I think about in my cooking style. Like music, when you make food, from my perspective, the food should taste round. It should be round and not have little spiky things in it, you know, little spiky elements. That it's the whole thing should, the dish, the flavor that you, you know, that you enjoy should be round. This is my own style.
You mean it penetrates all the food rather than sticking out by itself?
There are chefs, you know, and styles who prefer to have food that has, you know, spikes in the food, you know, that are spikes, meaning flavors that stick out more than another, you know. And I like the food to have an integrated flavor, integrated feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
Much like meditating, you know, much like working toward creating unity within all the aspects of the self.
And actually, when I think of one of your pieces called, I think it's called Emergence. No, is it called Emergence or Integration, something like that?
There's both, actually.
Well, I always enjoy it, but there is a meditative quality, and you talk about roundness in the food. But mm-hmm. one of the pieces that I keep thinking about is has a way of everything moves through, so there's no jarring pieces, so it takes a person into a deepening mm-hmm. place, right?
Yes, music, you know, intentional music, which is, you know, I'm a jazz musician. I'm also, you know, I can finger pick and play country blues and ragtime music. And then I'm an intentional music composer and producer. And in the field of therapeutic intentional music, there are a lot of interesting rules that you need, that the composer needs to follow. And if you don't follow these rules, the music will not function therapeutically.
So if you say intentional, that is because you're designing it for that function. Is that right?
That's right. That's right. Hmm. And you know, again, if you do, when you're making music therapeutic, you know, when you're making healing music or therapeutic music, if you will, you have to understand what the body needs, and you have to understand what the psyche needs in order for the experience, the music, which is, it's an experience, right? You're experiencing the music, so that the experience is, as we say, clinically efficacious. You know, in other words, so that it actually performs what you're saying it's going to do.
So how did you learn that? Like, does a person study? Isn't that an intuitive thing?
I was the first one. I mean, in all honesty. And so nobody taught me. I've taught a lot of people, and now there are, you know,
It's a field. It's a huge field of study.
Right. It's a field. And I have to say that, you know, so I'll just tell a story for a second.
Please.
It's that One of the things that's really important in creating therapeutic music and music for true healing, as opposed to just music that, you know, kind of fills your space with harmonic beauty and things like that, but music that is actually clinically efficacious. One of the very first things, maybe even the first thing, is that the music has to create the relaxation response.
Oh, right.
And that is a clinical term. That's not a new age term, or, you know, there's a clinical term called the relaxation response, and it has specific meaning. And the relaxation response is a state of lowered blood pressure, lowered pulse, and a dropping of brain waves into a theta or even a delta state.
So it's a meditative effect, right?
That's right. Mm-hmm. And as a matter of fact, Herbert Benson, who wrote the book, The Relaxation Response.
Yeah, I remember reading that years ago.
That was really old, right? I mean, that was one of the things that I got
a hold of. So am I, David.
Yeah. Well, so you're saying you're really old?
Yeah.
Well, you know, you're only as pretty as you feel, honey. So, you know, I'm no spring chicken myself. So, yeah, so Herbert, who is a compadre of mine, and he was at Harvard, and I was at the center at Harvard, and the relaxation, the book, The Relaxation System, was definitely a pivotal book in the medical land. It didn't have anything to do with music.
Mm-hmm.
But I figured out how to create harmonic structures, musical structures, that when a person listened to these musical structures, their breathing became entrained with the rising and falling of these musical structures. And when the body breathed in time, in this precise timing that was being delivered via these musical structures, when the body was breathing in resonance with the timing of the rising and falling, very quickly the body dropped into the relaxation response. And I figured out how to do that because I was a very long-term meditator. And then I broke my back in a car accident in 1980. And in my recovery of that, where I didn't have an operation, I used these breathing techniques.
Well, let me ask you a question first, which is, if the music has been carefully set up to structure that, does the breathing response, the dipping of the breath in the flow with the music, is that a spontaneous thing?
It is. I'm not sure that I would. Yes, the answer is yes, and I would clarify that yes with that you don't have to tell people to do it.
Right. Okay. That's what I was
and
thinking.
If I may, that's what you're trying to say. And so
you broke your back, and then did you? Is that you carry on with your story because it's interesting.
Well, I broke my back and I was paralyzed and I couldn't walk and it was a big thing, and I needed to not have an operation. I didn't want to, you know, go through any of that. And so I used these meditation techniques, which included a great deal of breath control, and I actually was able to walk out of the hospital. And then I had a long period.
How long a process?
It took about a month.
Okay.
And then I was in recovery for about a year. And during that period, I began to experiment with these musical forms. I had a lot of time on my hands, and I was laying down. And then gradually,
did you walk
I
at all during that period?
Yeah, with a brace, and it was a, you know, a reasonably big deal.
Mm-hmm. Painful.
And yeah, lots of pain.
Mm-hmm.
And learning about pain reduction with breath and relaxation techniques and the relaxation response, and you know, no drugs, no pharmaceuticals.
Wow. Brave. You were brave.
Well, I just didn't want to do that, you know. I didn't want to become a stupid drug addict. I didn't want to become a, you know, an opiate addict, which is what happens with prescription drugs, you know.
I know.
And I just didn't want to do that. So, and I like my mind, you know. I like my brain. And I didn't want to lose my brain.
Yeah.
So that was that. And then a couple of years later, I'd come back, you know, and I was writing soundtracks for films and doing cool stuff in Boston. And I was able to, with some partners, build a recording studio.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a really nice studio. It was one of the first computer automated studios in the country, really. And it was in there, because I owned the studio, that I had a lot of time on my hands, and that enabled me to construct the first therapeutic musical experiments.
And the name of your company was, and still is, TheraSound, isn't it? Therapeutic Sound?
Yeah, people can go to therasound.com and, you know, see all kinds of things.
And hear it. Can they get the relaxation response from that?
They can see, they can have some samples, yes. And so we want to create the relaxation response. That's what the very first thing we want to do, is bring the body down.
Mm.
And there are rules to doing that. You see, this was the original point, is that when you... So I learned... real fast when I set out on this path of the science of sound.
Right, right.
You know, that I learned real quick that there were all kinds of what seemed to be impositions on me as a composer. You know, because you have to create the relaxation response, and among other things. And in order to create the relaxation response, you have to perform this music in a very specific, rigid way. And it seems extremely confining compositionally. And that's when it became a spiritual path. Because I realized that I had to let go of my own desire as a composer and my own need, if you will, for self-expression, and because those are the things that were and are, those are the things that get in the way of creating truly functional, therapeutic, and healing music.
Well, can I ask you this question? We all know what things like, for example, Gregorian chant and ancient Hindu chants and so on, do they, can some of those create that response of relaxation?
Absolutely. Hmm. Absolutely. And those, we have a lot of things to say about this.
Oh, that's fascinating to me. Go ahead.
So in India, in particular,
mm-hmm.
and then in Egypt, in particular, and then in Greece, in particular, and to a interestingly skewed degree in China, in particular,
hmm.
But particularly in India, in Egypt, and in Greece, and the sort of the surrounding areas, Turkey was a very influential thing in the very ancient past. And so Indian music is very, very, very intentionally designed. ancient, old Indian music, venerable Indian music,
like
modern
with the sitar
Indian.
and that sort of thing.
Well, that's yes, but there are many other instruments, and the point is that those folks figured out how to play very specific harmonic intervals and specific harmonic chord structures and melodic notions that do create the relaxation response that also resonate with particular energy centers quite specifically, which is I do the same thing with my work.
Mm-hmm.
And resonate with times of the day, with times of the month, with emotional states of mind, and they're highly, highly, highly organized in this way, 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 way deeper than any Western model. Like way deeper than, I mean, all, Western music is almost non-existent in the understanding of this form of these forms that we're talking about in Indian music and ragas.
Well, and they're actually built to create, just put people in trances, aren't they? Sort of.
Well, there are ways of doing that, and that's precisely what we're talking about is the intentional use of harmonic properties to create specific psychological and physiological effects, you know? And so, yes, and trance might not be the best word. What we might say is A, creating the relaxation response, dropping pulse and blood pressure, and entraining the consciousness to drop its, you know, into a theta and delta state, which is associated with so-called trance. And then also, this is very important, is that Indian music and ancient Egyptian music and Greek music all understood that certain harmonic relationships, the relationship between this note and this note, when those two notes were sounded together, that interval, that relationship created a specific emotional response. So there is.
Is that
there
like
are,
the temple bells that are always slightly dissonant? You know the two bells that you clack together.
Yes, that's. I mean, that is an example of an interval.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the reason reason that you say dissonant is because the interval is harmonically difficult, but the point is underneath that is the fact that you wouldn't have harmony. Or you wouldn't have dissonance, which is the other side of harmony, if you didn't have more than one note striking at the same moment. That's
right.
What harmony is. So a thing that should be really, it's really interesting, and there's two more things. One of them is that the emotional component, it's really important to understand intentional music and therapeutic music, that it has a physiological nature, like the breath effect, which is what I call the creating, that's what Tarasan does. It uses this thing I call the breath effect.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a physiological component, which is the alteration of respiratory rate, slowing down of heartbeat, opening of energy centers and creating a flow of vital force. These are all physiological things. And there are distinct and hardcore written in stone compositional rules that you have to follow in order for the music to do that. And then there's two parts. The second part is the psychological aspect, the emotional aspect, the psychic aspect. one might even say sort of the energetic aspect of the music. And there are hard and fast rules in that realm as well.
Really?
Absolutely. And it takes years of study to do that. And that brings me unintentionally, ha ha ha, to the new project that we're talking about, which is a song for your soul. So
it's now a website, isn't it? In the process.
It is, but it isn't. And it was supposed to be up today, and I'm not one for making excuses, but by the time this airs, maybe you can go to asongforyoursoul.com and see this new thing. And you can also right now go to therasound.com and you know, many things will be revealed there. But this service, A Song for Your Soul, is really special. And it's really special. It's amazing, actually. And it takes into account everything that we're talking about in terms of these rules and structures and being able, for me, being able to perform music on my guitar or on a keyboard, but really on my guitar, that brings forward this physical and emotional response.
But if you're going to reach my soul, how do you gauge that you're reaching the soul by the physical and emotional response?
Well, it's all about opening, right? It's all about clearing. It's all about resonating. It's all about opening, clearing, and resonating. You know, so in a Song for Your Soul session, as a harmonic therapist, which is what I also do and have been for many, many years, I know how to listen to people. I know how to receive a person's state of mind, state of their psyche, their energetic body, and then as a harmonic therapist, musician person, I know how to identify where the issues or the blockages are within the mind and the body within the individual. And then I also know how to select the harmonic intervals and the key signatures that will resonate with the body and the mind at that level of their issue or their blockage or their trauma or their illness. And then I'm able to compose music in real time. That's what this Song for the Soul thing is.
I mean, in the moment, you can compose music that assists someone who's going through a process? Or
absolutely.
Wow, that's brilliant.
And thank you very much. It is, for me, I released the first officially recognized therapeutic piece of music called Balance. And I released that in 1984.
Wonderful.
And that's how long I've been doing this. And so for me, I'm so, if you will, sort of humbly happy about the evolution into this thing called A Song for Your Soul, which is a half an hour session with on the phone, amazing, in Skype or on your cell phone with headphones, and we talk for 20 minutes or so. I get to understand where the blockages are, where you are, you know, where you're resonating with in your life path and those kinds of words, you know. And then I'm able to identify where those energies are stuck and what needs to be moved and what needs to be soothed and healed, if you will. And then I'm able to identify a key signature and notes and scales that will do that soothing, releasing, unblocking job on my guitar. And then I can play that in real time over the phone and for 3 to 5 minute improvisational, inspirational song for your soul.
Well, tell me this, David. As each of us got a personal vibration, so I have a song, meaning I have a song in my soul. I have a vibrational tune in the essential part of my nature or my being.
Yeah. My answer to that is no. And then my answer to that is yes.
Oh, that's great. A conundrum.
Well, it's not really a conundrum, actually. It is, in my experience and my very, what would you say, like educated opinion,
mm-hmm.
I would, and that's a good question, and I would really say this, that a person has a fundamental rate of vibration.
Okay, that's okay. Kind of responding from the level at which I was aiming
and
my
so,
question.
Bear with me.
Okay, I am.
So the rate of vibration that I'm referring to resonates, is generated via the consciousness of the individual. And so if this person is operating out of the need for validation or recognition or love, then the consciousness is operating at a particular rate of vibration. And that rate of vibration inhabits the neural network of the brain itself. And that is what is vibrating to move past New Age concepts and sort of quasi-physics-y concepts. It is really true that the neural network of the brain fires and moves at a particular rate of vibration. And that rate of vibration is alterable, Veronica. This is the next point.
So, but it's you're that, saying that my basic consciousness is in my brain's rate of vibration, or are you saying my reactions to life are there?
I am saying that your consciousness is resonating and vibrating at a particular rate. This is determined by how you view the world, for lack of a better term. There, of course, is a fundamental frequency that the body has.
Right.
You know, just like the rock over there has a fundamental frequency. Okay, and so we're not really talking about that.
Oh, okay. That was one of my underlying questions here.
I mean, we can talk about that. You know, the heart is doing what the heart does, and the pump is the pump, and it has a particular frequency, and there are actually four electric frequencies that are in the heart, in the four chambers of the heart. The mm-hmm. liver does what the liver does. The kidney does what the kidney does, and that's what Chinese medicine is. Mm-hmm. That's what acupuncture is. It is electric, and it is dealing with the electricity moving through the body, which they call qi. And that's what you are dealing with when you use needling. You are putting the needles along certain channels, meridians, and those needles are opening and closing the various gates of the different flow patterns of the electricity.
Right.
So that's that. But, you know, there's over 3,000 meridians in the human body, and each one of them has a different frequency.
Well, you know, I was actually asking about...
We'd be hard-pressed to say that there was one single frequency, you see.
Yeah, I okay. understand that.
So I would move the conversation into the frequency and the rate of vibration of consciousness.
Okay.
And so using the energy system, the chakra system, and the energetic body, which is akin to the lymphatic system, you know, the glandular aspects of things, each energy center has a very particular rate of vibration. That's why we can play music in certain key signatures, which are those very same rates of vibration.
Mm.
Okay, so the key of C resonates with the root chakra. All right, the key of D resonates with the abdominal, the sacral chakra. The heart is resonating with the key of F. And these are all frequencies as well.
Well, I guess my question is that true for everyone, or is it very personal?
Everyone. Everyone.
Somebody told me once that I was born on a D sharp.
Well, and I don't even know what that means.
Oh, neither do I. I was hoping you could.
That you were born on a D. I don't even know what the hell that means. I have no idea what that means.
Well, I just thought I'd throw it in there. I mean, it's
yeah, it's a good thing to throw in. I understand. I mean,
yeah.
You know, there's about 20 ways. There's 50 ways to leave your lover, right? So right. I don't know what that means. I mean, does that mean that you were born under the metal element? Okay, in Chinese five element, which the metal element happens to resonate with the key of D sharp. Okay, so is that what that means? Does it mean that you were born under X, Y, and Z astrological sign
no,
and
no,
circumstance?
No, what I was told is we all have the essence of our being, our soul, or whatever you want to call it, has its own note, if you will. I was told that.
I'm not buying that for one second.
Well, good. I just wanted your opinion.
Okay. I'm not buying that for one second. Again, consciousness is an ever changing, fluid, you know, if you will, you know, transient thing. And your fundamental, okay, which we could use that word,
right.
You know, your fundamental, Veronica, as you grew, as you grow, and as you have grown on your spiritual journey, your consciousness changes.
That's true. I want that.
And that's the point, right? I mean,
yeah.
That's the point of the path. That is the point of the work, is to move from one level of consciousness to the next. So as you change, your fundamental changes, your rate of vibration changes. This is precisely my point. It's that it is not a static thing, mm-hmm. and God forbid that it would be. You understand? Otherwise, what? I'm stuck in D sharp. You understand what I'm saying? That's it. I can't move. That's like some bizarre Hindu.
Well, I never thought I couldn't move. I just thought that we all have an identity at a very deep level that might be evoked, or we might get attuned to it and break out of the densities of reaction that are, you know, that we kept.
Yeah, and once you did that exact thing, your basic fundamental tonality changed.
Okay, good.
You know, it didn't stay the same.
Oh, you want that, you know, for me, yeah.
And what is the cool thing is to understand that. Mm-hmm. And the cool thing is to say, wow, you know, what is eternal, okay, and you know, if you will, sort of constant and continuous, is the fact that there are fundamentals. Okay, and so this level of consciousness will be vibrating at this particular rate. This energy center will be vibrating at this particular rate. Those are constants.
Mm-hmm.
But now when we, and that's what's constant, if you take my meaning, it's like the constant of the constant sort of thing. But with then the next thing that's very constant is the changing nature of that. It's a fluid thing. It's not the same constant. The concept of the constant is constant, if you will, but the constant itself changes. So, for example, the consciousness that is resonating with the form of dualism as its basic operating system, that vision of duality being the way that the world is shaped according to. So in that vision, there is a me and a you and an us and a them and an inner and an outer and an in-breath and an out-breath and you and a God and a deity and you and a government and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And all of those forms of duality create things like territory and nationalism and patriotism and things like this. And so the consciousness that is resonating with this form, this structure, which is the structure of duality, is resonating in within the neural networks of the brain and within the energetic structure of the body, is literally operating according to the function of this dualistic form. And then through the process of meditation and developing self-awareness and embarking upon the path, the person eventually comes to understand the meaning of unity and the meaning of unifying the two aspects. I'm seeing the in-breath and the out-breath as one event as opposed to two sequential events. You see, that's mm-hmm. what duality will do. It will show you things in sequence, like breathing. It's that elegant, you know, it's that simple. And so the consciousness that has done the work of moving, as we say in my practice, moving from the two into the one, now, and they have succeeded in literally remapping the basic operating system of the consciousness of the brain from the dualistic form into the unified form, that consciousness has achieved a transformation of consciousness.
Hmm.
And that is available to all of us. This is not a Buddha, a Jesus thing, or a guru-y thing. It's every single human being on this planet has the opportunity to do that precise thing of the moving of two into one. And the point here is that the consciousness that's operating in the dualistic, or as we say, in the bifurcated realm, the consciousness that's operating out of the form of dualism resonates with a fundamental tonality that is in harmony or is generated by the form of dualism. And then when the consciousness does the work and succeeds in moving the two into one, and now it's operating within the field of unification, that consciousness is now resonating with a new fundamental. And it has changed. And that's my, that is the real answer to your very good question. That is what is going on. So another way, when you are have a blockage in your root chakra,
okay,
say you're very sick, okay? Say you have a really bad situation, a life-threatening situation. So the root chakra is the seat of the creative life force. You know, this is where the serpent fire lives in the body.
Right.
It's the seat of the life force of the body. Now, you're sick, and you are in pain. You're in pain, and you might even have a life-threatening situation. 9 out of 10 folks in that situation will want to leave the body. They will want to get out of the body, because being in the body is a painful and not pleasant experience. Within a particular frame of mind, you see?
Yes.
And so they will spend a great deal of energy leaving the body. Now, this is a massive blockage in the root chakra. What's happening and what should be happening is for the individual to embrace their incarnation, and in so doing, resonate with the fire, the creative life force in the body, and use that as part of the healing energy that the body needs in this deeply life-threatening situation. Okay? And so the consciousness and the individual that is doing that, okay, is unblocking and letting go of the energy that is residing in the root chakra. Now, the person who is leaving the body and doing all this disassociative work is literally fighting the body and fighting the healing energy that the body has available to it. That individual is resonating at a particular fundamental. And what we can do by hitting, in quotes, by hitting the body with the key of C, with the rate of vibration that stimulates the root chakra, and hitting it with the breath effect, the person will begin slowing down and breathing, and then they will receive the key signature, and that actually opens up the root chakra and floods the body with the vital force. And that makes it a different fundamental. Again, same question, different land, if you will, and different answer, so to speak, but same world.
Did you do that for yourself? Can you do it for yourself?
I do it for myself, and I've done it for literally thousands of people. That is the nature of my work in one land. You see, that is very physiological, right? That's a physiological thing, is the breath effect, and then identifying where the blockage is in the energy body, and then stimulating the energy center with particular rates of vibration, which are very Indian. They have this, down.
And they have had for a few years, right?
For our, you know, for a very, very long time. And it's all mapped out, and it is. So doing that is a very physiological thing. You see, then there is all of the emotional and the psychic thing. For example, the consciousness that wants to leave the body. You see, this is, if you will, an emotional place. It's a feeling place. It's an energetic place. It's an emotional place. So we have to work harmonically and melodically and beautifully with not only giving the person the music of the key signature that stimulates and opens the energy center and releases the vital force, but also simultaneously we give them certain harmonic relationships and overtones and beautiful, beautiful intervals that soothe and create a feeling of happiness about being in the body. You know, so in other words, we help them physically resonate and receive the flow of vital force. Okay, and at the same time, we help them emotionally come back in the body,
right.
which is how you heal you with the body.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you work when you're leaving the body and doing all that stuff. You're totally fighting the body. You're fighting it. You're telling it, "I don't like you. I want to get out of here. I'm gone." And imagine, Veronica, imagine the energy that it takes to maintain a constant state of disassociation. Just think about that in terms of energy expenditure, you know, and energy flow. So the consciousness and the identity, right, the identity that is committed to leaving the body is expending vast amount of energy to do that.
Now, that makes sense.
Right? Mm-hmm. So our job is to turn that around and create a therapeutic intervention that is harmonic in nature, that is the most benign intervention. You know, there's no drugs, there's no knives, there's no, you know, surgeries, there's no nothing. There's just the beauty of vibration and resonance and harmony. And through the conscious, intentional use of that, we can turn that leaving the body and all of that energy that is being expended in the service of doing that, we can, through a musical harmonic intervention, turn that upside down and bring the person back in the body, and all of that energy that was being expended in the service of leaving the body is now available for the healing process and assisting the body in doing what it wants to do.
Well, that is really exciting. And we're going to have to end this. Thanks to David Eisen of Therasound. It was wonderful talking to you.
It's always really nice to be with you, Veronica. I enjoy our conversation so very much. You're
Me
a wonderful
too.
Interview.
And I'll look forward to our next one. And good night, and tell everybody, Therasound.com is where a lot of your music is, and songforyoursoul.com is the up-and-coming website.
See everybody out there on the energetic airwaves. Don't forget to love one another, and we'll see you soon.
Thanks, David. Good night. Good night, everyone. Thank you so much for listening.